This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Milwaukee, start your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, sports cars, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, here's your host, Steve Zocchi.
Welcome to another edition of the Final Inspection Show. I'm Steve Zocchi, along with my trusty sidekick, the Polish Pipe. I'm Jeff Orlowski. How you doing today, Jeff?
Oh, fantastic, Steve. Ready to talk some racing fuel and fumes and all that.
Well, just what would you like to talk about?
Well, you know, we got the playoffs starting in the Cup Series.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. Now, I always like to talk to or get feedback from the casual fan, because I feel that's a little more important than your diehard fan, because your diehard fan's going to be there and knows what's going on, follows the sport. It would be like, Tim Allen talking baseball.
Right.
That's right in his, strike zone. Boom. And he knows a little bit about, he knows football. He knows a little bit about NASCAR. So, when you talk to Tim Allen about NASCAR, it's kind of good to get his opinion because he's like the casual fan. He's kind of on the periphery. And the same thing when I'm at work or out and about. I like to talk to fans of, you're Steve, or they know I'm into racing, and they'll talk. But I've yet to have somebody go, I'm so glad that so-and-so is in the playoffs.
Right.
I don't get any feedback from anybody on the playoffs itself. Have you? Do you talk to me? Have you heard? Even on the social media stuff. Now, that can be a little bit biased to who you follow, who you're friends with, this and that. I understand that. But I don't get like, I really hope, so-and-so does well in the playoffs or so-and-so makes the playoffs, this, that, or the other thing. I just don't feel that the fan base in general has really embraced it. And I'm not talking, like I said, I'm not talking about the hardcore fans. The guys who have the numbers on the back windshield and all that stuff. I'm talking about, your casual fans, the guy who's, should I watch golf or NASCAR? I'm going to say, NASCAR is at Talladega. I'm going to watch Talladega. Those are the kinds of guys kind of interested, because those, in a way, are your most important fans. Those are the ones that will kind of beef up those ratings or whatnot. So, and I'm just wondering, have you heard any, you get any feedback or?
No, the buzz seems very low entering the playoffs this season, which is a shame because, yes, there was like a 6 to 8 week window where NASCAR was god awful. They had like 6 to 8 weeks in a row that, the racing was not exciting. The finishes were bad and it wasn't fun. But it was a good race at Indianapolis, which is surprising to say. And
you thought so?
It was obviously Kevin Harvick dominated. It was the same old story where it was hard to pass. You can catch the guy who's running in front of you, but your chances of passing him, unless he made a mistake, weren't great. So, as far as like quality of racing, it wasn't phenomenal, but it was entertaining. I was entertained while I was watching it, which is, more than I can say for Indy recently with NASCAR. So, you know, you would think that the way they build this up and everything that they've done, you know, you get the first 26 races, oh, it's all about getting that win, pointing yourself in and all that. And, you know, I was one of the ones that was happy that Jimmy Johnson missed it finally. I think the only person happier than I was probably Chad Knaus. JJ didn't make the playoffs. I know he is in.
And I thought they brought that up if you watched practice yesterday. I thought that was a really good point because everybody said, oh, Jimmy missed it. Oh, Jimmy this, Jimmy this. You know, tip of the hat to Chad Knaus.
Yeah.
Who brought in William Byron, good driver, young driver, but very, very green. You know, let's face it. You know, and that 24 car is not the same. It's not, you know.
The 24 yeah. car. From
and, yeah. Right. And it, so, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's impressive. I mean, you look at who's on the outside looking in. I mean, there's a lot of people who like to be in that 24 car right now.
Yeah, it is very impressive for Chad Knaus. And, you know, Jimmy Johnson's going through something now. And, you know, he's got all the trophies that he needs, Hall of Fame, first ballot, you know.
Would you be surprised if you got the press release?
No.
Major announcement.
JJ retires?
Major announcement for the 48 car at Homestead. You know, and then it leaks out. Yeah, would you be surprised by that?
No, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, when you have reached the pinnacle that Jimmy Johnson had, where he had all the success in the world, was winning championships every single year. When you start struggling as bad as you're struggling now, you know, it is hard to sit there and try to refire, you know, that desire within you. Because you're so used to running up front. You're so used to collecting checkered flags and huge checks. And now all of a sudden, whew, you know, I'm back at square one, kind of.
Here's the other thing, too. Guy is rich.
Yeah, filthy.
He lives the good life. He's a one percenter.
Huh, yeah.
He gets to fly wherever he wants. And, you know, flip that to David Pearson, Richard Petty, and those guys in the 60s. You know, okay, they had kids in that, but it was a different family. The way the American family was set up was a little different.
Yeah.
Mom stayed home, and, you know, dad went out. And you know, a lot of guys talked to Kyle Petty and these second-generation drivers. You know, dad was gone a lot. You know, they would go to some of the races. It was a little bit easier for some of the NASCAR guys because in the 60s and 70s, it was still primarily a southeastern sport.
Right.
You know, they would have their little jaunts up north to New England and that and some other stuff. And then Ontario opened up and, you know, then they started to branch out a little bit. Michigan, 1969, and so forth. But primarily it was the Southwest, you know, Bristol, North Wilkesboro, Martinsville, all the, you know, and they would go to a lot of those races. But, I mean, now you're, you know, case in point, 21 car, we're going to talk about Paul Menard. I want to talk about that with David Land coming up in the next hour a little bit. You know, he wants to spend time with his family. Let's face it. I think if you've been doing this for a while, I don't think it's as fun as it used to be.
Yeah, I agree.
And racing against some of these guys and how the racing is, you look at, you know, I mean, can you imagine if you get Carl Edwards, Matt Kenseth? I know Ricky Rudd, how his feelings are. And now Paul Menard in a room, what they would, you know, just see what they say about what the Cup Series is today. I think a lot of fans would be shocked.
Well, you know, if you threw Rusty Wallace into the race this week, had him drive this car, this package, and then put him in the room with those guys too.
Yeah.
You know, you...
He would say, I agree with you guys. Well, you guys, you know, it's...
You know, what do you mean you hold it wide open?
That's what they're doing at Vegas.
I know.
You know, IndyCar was doing that, and there's a lot of us saying, you know, that's not really racing.
Right.
It's bad enough you do it at Talladega and Daytona. Okay, we'll kind of – we understand the dynamics of that. Now they're doing it at Vegas and you know, and they were talking to Steve Letarte. Steve Letarte like saying, well, if that's the case, they got too much downforce. They should be trimming that thing out. Yeah, you're going fast, but you can go faster if you trim it out, which apparently they can still do, I guess, somehow. And that's with the tape in the front and all that. But, you know, it's, yeah, that's not a great package right now. You know, and it sure, there's some pack racing, and it looks good in the first couple laps, but once they start, you know, it's hard. But case in point, you know what? What could have been the best race of the weekend was against last night. Look at Austin Hill.
Oh,
what
I know.
He was able to do. We'll talk about that in a little bit, too.
Well, I was Steve, I was thinking about this last week while I was watching Indianapolis, because I'm a huge baseball fan as well. And I love baseball. But today's baseball sucks. It's boring. It's all home runner strikeout, which is the same way that NASCAR is turning into, where it's all restart and then the next restart.
Yeah.
And you get 3 to 5 good laps after a restart. If you're on a short track like Bristol or Martinsville, you might get 10 or 15. If you're on a, you know, a huge track, you know, you might get 3. But you get a few exciting laps after the restart, and then after that, everybody thins out. Nobody can pass each other. They can catch up, but they can't pass. And so then it's like, okay, and you're just sitting there waiting for the next restart. It's kind of boring. So I am not a fan of this package. I like you, this isn't real racing. And, you know, it sucks to say because I still watch every single lap every week and follow all the news and everything like that. I love me some NASCAR. But I'm loving it less than it was.
Well, last week it was Kevin Harvick winning his 48th race, Cup race.
Didn't he tie Tony Stewart?
Second at Indianapolis. And it ties him with actually Herb Thomas for 15th on the All-Star Cup Series win list.
Okay, so he passed Tony then.
And this is impressive. This is Harvick's second consecutive top 5 and 6th top 10 in a row at Indianapolis. He finished 4th in last year's Brickyard 400. And he is he dominated that race, especially the second half. Joey Logano winning stage 1 and then Harvick winning stage 2 and then the final stage. Let's see here. I guess because I'm a bit of a Harvick fan. All right, fine. But what is your overall opinion,
you know,
of the race?
Like I said, it was entertaining. It wasn't phenomenal racing. I'm a Harvick fan too. He dominated. You would think I would have loved every single lap of it. But again, Kevin Harvick tried to Kevin Harvick away that race when he sat there and decided to choose the inside lane out of the blue on one of those restarts and gets passed. He was rocking the outside line on every single restart and would sit there and pull out, take the lead, and then extend his lead. So what the hell was he doing choosing the inside? It was like he was just trying to make it exciting for the fans watching at home and the fans that showed up in the stands. And, you know, it was a total head scratcher. And you're like, you know, Kevin, what are you doing? You know, and it's always something with that team. You know, usually it was pit road mistakes and all this kind of stuff. Now it's him just out of the blue deciding to go to the inside line and losing the lead for a while. But, yeah, a dominating victory. So, you know, like I said, was it the most exciting? No. Was it still entertaining? Yeah.
Well, he is quoted as saying, I don't know if we had the best car, but we had the fastest car. We gave up the lead there in one of those restarts. And we came in and pitted. The caution came out and worked our way. We had given so many just because of those circumstances. And the way the caution flag fell today, it actually worked out in our favor. It gave us control of the race, and we were able to keep control of the race and not make any mistakes. So, you know.
Great finish for Bubba Wallace.
Fantastic. Third place. That's what that team needed. That is a team that, you know, was lucky to make it, you know, through the whole season this year with funding and everything. And that goes a long way. And yes, I'm very happy. You know, NASCAR needs that 43 in the Cup Series, and it was very nice to see.
They need the 43, and they need Bubba.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bubba can bring the younger generation into the NASCAR fold if they, A, promote him the right way, and B, all these old, you know, cranky old-ass NASCAR fans don't sit there and keep coming down on him because he came out and said that he was depressed.
Well,
was struggling with depression and yeah. stuff like that, you know. The kid will tell you what's on his mind. He's fantastic as far as all the social media and everything like that that he does. Let Bubba be Bubba, and NASCAR will reap a windfall of benefit from it.
He came out of the car and said, hey, I guess I can drive. Because, let's face it, there's a lot of people in social media that just, you know, he hasn't had a good year. Oh, blame the driver. That's the easiest thing to do.
Of course.
And, you know, let's face it, there's more have-nots than haves in NASCAR now.
Oh, yeah.
And especially for that team where they are, and you look at there's lots of ebbs and flows of in racing. Look at what Hendrick was going through, and looks like they've reversed that trend. Even Roush, Fenway.
Yeah, look at what they are now compared to what they used to be.
And if you watch that Wood Brothers documentary from a week or two ago from Darlington, you know, when they released their Darlington Weekend, I mean, they were in a world of trouble. Eddie Wood and Edsel Ford are really tight. And Edsel calls up and says, you know, hey, what's going on? How come you're not calling me? Eddie's like, I'm embarrassed to call you. And he's like, well, what's going on? He says, well, we're having issues. We're falling behind. And Edsel kind of took the bull by the horn and said, okay, we'll give you some help. And Ford was able to help him. They took a step back. That's when they went to a partial schedule, and they were keen on certain races. So they were able to, you know, kind of pay attention more with certain tracks, and that they felt like they could excel in. And it worked for them. Now, of course, when they came out with the new system, with the teams and that, and the Wood Brothers was on the outside looking in, that was quite embarrassing, you know. But
yeah, the charter system.
And that was embarrassing. You know, well, they're not a full-time team. Well.
Absolutely embarrassing. NASCAR should still be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah,
that
was awful. I just thought that was just so tone-deaf, you know. Yeah, well, you know, I don't know.
But at the time, NASCAR was...
Oh, that's part, and it does. Let's face it, that's one of the issues why they're in. That's why they're in the position they are today.
That they hired way too many yes men.
Yep.
So they keep stepping all over their own toes, and it's sad.
Well, let's take a break here. We're going to talk more Brickyard 400, what occurred in Indianapolis, get some feedback, and then also we're going to talk about Vegas coming up next on the Final Inspection Show.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway. Yes, they are open. Gates opened at 8 o'clock this morning for the Anarchy Series. So make sure you get out there to see some great, great drag racing. And the rumors of flooding have been greatly exaggerated. So I'm sure there might be a couple soggy parts in the grass, maybe, but. No, Great Lakes is open, so make sure you get out to Great Lakes Dragway this weekend.
Their bar is dry. The food stands are dry. The seats will be dry. That's all you need. So get out there and enjoy.
And it is a fantastic, fantastic day in southeastern Wisconsin. So make sure you get out there. I also like to thank our friends at David Hobbs Honda. Make sure you check out DavidHobbs.com for all the best and new and used vehicles. In fact, we will have David on in the second hour talking some Formula One with David Hobbs and what's going on there and some other stuff. What's going on in Elkhart Lake this weekend, along with the Formula Ford Series, I like to say. Hello to everybody up there. Pretty cool, impressive 50th anniversary for Formula Fords up at Elkhart Lake this weekend.
So they had a heck of a turnout.
Yeah, very cool. They had had all the cars lined up on pit road. They took a very cool photo that was posted on our Facebook page at TFI, the Final Inspection Show. So make sure you check that out. And Kevin Harvick, your winner at the Brickyard 400, winning from the pole. He led 118 of 160 laps. And how can I say this? Should we talk about the attendance? Do we need to talk about the attendance?
Yeah, because I forgot who wrote it, but he made a very good point when he compared the attendance at Indianapolis compared to the attendance the week before at Darlington.
At Darlington, yes.
So
it is a visual. I understand that. There is a visual issue there because, let's face it, Indianapolis Motor Speedway seats, 200-plus thousand people.
Right.
That's a lot of seats.
It fits a very large city worth of people.
Yes.
And, yes, it does look bad when there's 50 to 75,000 people there. And, the place is, you're sitting at a quarter full. But when you look at total amount, and we talked about it the week before, where, NASCAR goes from a sellout at Darlington to racing in front of nobody at Indianapolis, excuse me, that's not exactly true, Steve.
It's not.
So, yes, it looks horrible from a visual standpoint. It looks bad on TV. If you're watching the race, you got to be like, oh, my God, there's four people there, and nobody likes NASCAR anymore. NASCAR is dying. But when you take a deeper look at the numbers, it actually isn't as bad as...
Here it is. I got Doug Bowles, president of Indianapolis Motor Speedway. This was through Bob Hockrass. Doug Bowles, president of IMS, spoke to the drivers before the drivers' meeting. He said, Doug Bowles told the drivers before the race that the place has 235,000 permanent seats. There would be about 65,000 folks at the race today. It didn't look like it. No, it didn't. But the facility is 275 acres, and it is extremely difficult to estimate. Darlington seats about 47,000 people. So while it was sold out last week, that is about 20% of what IMS holds, not to mention infield capabilities. And then he goes on to think, Pockrass goes on to write, I think the whole tire debacle and the lack of a Stewart-Gordon local emotional connection has sapped the enthusiasm for this race more than any other race on the circuit. And if a fan is cash-strapped, the fan would rather give up this race before the Indy 500, a tradition for many families. I'm not optimistic about the move to the July 4th weekend will work, but the track hopes it can capitalize on another holiday weekend. I'm not a fan of running the road course, and I have a little bit of hope that the Generation 7 car can perform much better, but this will be always a tough place for stock cars. I love this place and enjoy seeing the cup race, even though it is frustrating, and I still believe that racing on an oval elevates the status of NASCAR in the eyes of the general fan. There is no reason NASCAR can't find a way to run at least the Xfinity or truck race at IRP on another weekend, possibly in May. For NASCAR to work at IMS anywhere, there needs to be emotional ties. Two drivers in the cars with those watching, feeling their driver and crew chief make the difference. Just so you know, you will never see a NASCAR race at IMS during May.
Right.
There would be a riot.
Of course.
However, the IRP thing really hurt because I went to a lot of those races, a lot of those truck races and Xfinity slash Busch slash whatever at IRP. And those are generally very, very good races. It's a very racy track. It's a wide track and it's a short track. Granted, now there are factors that are involved with that. IRP is owned by the NHRA. The oval track is the redheaded stepchild of IRP. Everything, all the money goes into the drag strip. The oval had a lot of the issues, some of the issues that we see with oval tracks, especially short tracks, across the nation where the infrastructure was falling apart. They had a very small press box, and the infield facilities were a joke. I mean, dating back to the 60s and not even updated from there. There's a little bit of – so when you had – a lot of the times you would go and then, let's say, pick a year, 1999. NASCAR is just cooking. You go to IMS. You do your press stuff at IMS, which was packed, a lot of press. You still had all the newspapers in and everything. And a third of those would go to IRP. And so IRP had to put together like this infield press auxiliary setup, which was basically a trailer. Now, granted, the Milwaukee Mile had media trailers for many years before they put in the media center in the infield. But it was for the time at that time in the early 90s, it wasn't that bad.
You know? Right.
But the IRP stuff was just a joke. The bathrooms were embarrassing. It was just the infield itself, the roads, everything. It was just awful. If it rained, there was no drainage. It was really bad. And people were tired of it. And a lot of the teams in which – at the time were these same cup teams that had Xfinity teams that were poaching all these sponsors. That was one of their events. They could say, you know, come to Indianapolis, you know, but they would go to IRP and the sponsors would be like, you know, where's the suites? Well, there are no suites, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
There are, but they're not really suites. So that's when, guys like Kevin Harvick was one of them, and Kyle Busch said, you know, maybe we should move this race to IMS then, because it was basically just to take care of the sponsors. Well, and the fans said, what? And a lot of the fans heard that and were like, why do we want to see, we're going to be there on, you know, for the Brickyard. I don't want to go there again. I like going to IRP. It's better racing. It's for the fan experience, for the fan in the stand. It was fantastic.
Oh yeah.
For everybody else, it sucked. So that's why you have on Saturday last week 4,000 people in the stands.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, just awful. That's even worse. Yeah, that Xfinity race.
Well, you know, a lot of the problem is when you sit there and you cater to the advertisers, to the big wigs, the big shots. It's got to be gorgeous suites and air conditioned and. You got to have, you know, massage chairs for these guys.
Well,
to
I guess
sit
what
in
I understand
that.
Kind of I guess what I'm saying is IRP could have done a little bit. They could have thrown them a bone, is I guess what I'm saying. So, yes, I am blaming those guys for doing that, for pulling the race. But then again, IRP made no attempt to upgrade their facilities.
Right.
So it was kind of like, you know, F you guys going after each other. Well, no, we don't have to do this. And I don't understand why. Maybe IRP saw the writing on the wall. Maybe they thought, well, if we put in $1 million, we don't know when we're going to get that money back. I don't know. But it just, they needed to, and they still do, need to upgrade those facilities at the Oval. Because it is a very viable situation. I mean, it's a viable track. It's great racing. And USAC races there a lot. And it's been around for years, and it's part of the fabric of the, you know, the 317, if you want to call it, motorsports life. You know, you go to IRP. It's convenient, and it's a cool place, but just unfortunately, you know, it's just not viable right now to many people, to the people in Daytona.
And you can't blame the NHRA because, you know, if you're going to throw money down, of course they're going to want to do it on the drag strip.
Now here's the other thing too. NHRA is hurting a little bit too.
Well, of course.
So I mean, as all motorsports is right now,
right?
You know, for grabbing for fans.
You know it, and it just it all comes back to brand loyalty. You know, NASCAR started hurting when it got too big for its own britches, and the prices got out of control. The hotels are ripping everybody off. The liquor stores were ripping everybody off.
everywhere you turned on NASCAR weekend, things were costing double and triple what they would on a normal weekend.
There's no smoking gun on what's happened since 2008.
There's tons of blame to go around.
Yeah, there's a series of issues and circumstances that occurred. The same thing with IndyCar. You can blame it on the split, but I'll go around and around with Robin Miller on this. There were issues with IndyCar prior to that that were gonna happen, and we're starting to. And you could see the shift in 1994 towards NASCAR from open wheeler because there was a lack of attention given to American drivers, and they were not growing their drivers. They were not growing American drivers, and guys like Jeff Gordon and that were going to NASCAR instead. And it was starting. The problem is even back then, there wasn't a lot of crossing between the two.
Right.
If you were a NASCAR writer, you were a NASCAR writer. So if you were an IndyCar writer, you're an IndyCar writer. You followed that series or CART at that time. And, you know, working at the mile, you had both. So you could kind of see both sides of the coin. So, but, yeah, there's no NASCAR's fallen because of X.
Right.
There's a lot of things involved, lot of things. And I think Bobby Unser summed it up best when they interviewed him about 5 years after the split with IndyCar. He says there's blood on both hands, which is true. I mean, both the CART and the IRL had did things to, certainly damage the both that series, their own series and the other one. So,
yeah, it's tough. And there's still people that don't come back that haven't come back to baseball since the strike. So, you know, anytime you have huge problems like that and you don't get it figured out in time. To save a season, to save a World Series, and you've got two sides just completely bullheaded enough to sit there and try to chop each other's legs off every single chance they got instead of trying to find any slice of common ground and come together and come out with the amicable solution that'll keep both sides happy while progressing the sport in the direction that it needs to go, then you run into problems like, you know, NASCAR has and IndyCar is bouncing back from. Their numbers are all looking a lot better than they were. But my problem with the IndyCar season is there are way too many gaps in their year.
Right.
You know, NASCAR for me is great because I'm dumb. And I know that every single week NASCAR is running on Saturday or Sunday. And with IndyCar, oh, yeah, they're running this week. Oh, and then they're going to have 3 weeks off, and they'll be back 3 weeks after. I'm not going to remember that.
Right.
I'm dumb. Put them on every single week. But, you know, when with the aero and all this stuff and how much this sport costs now, you can't do it.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk to Dennis Michelson.
Woohoo!
From D-Mike Media. Let's get his opinion on the Brickyard last weekend and what's going on. Happened this weekend in Vegas. Coming up next on the Final Inspection Show.
Final Inspection. Final Inspection. Now, Dennis Michelson of D-Mike Media is here to give us the inside track on NASCAR and the world of short track racing.
Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Yes, Great Lakes Dragway is open. They are not flooded out. They got cars going down the drag strip. Make sure to check them out this weekend. Lots of stuff going on there. And also, David Hobbs Honda. Make sure to check out DavidHobbs.com for the latest in new and used vehicles at David Hobbs Honda. Joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline from D-Mike Media, it is Dennis Michelson. Welcome to the show, sir.
Mr. Zucky, always a pleasure.
Well, thank you, and thanks for coming on the show once again. The Brickyard 400. Describe the Brickyard 400 in one word. I'm going to put you on the spot.
Underwhelming.
Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't a bad race, but it just, I don't think they've got the right rule package in NASCAR right now. And all the things that I hear about what is proposed for the next generation car doesn't have me encouraged that they're going to be going in the right direction. I get it. The technology is king in racing today, but stock cars should be a little tougher to drive. Mm-hmm. And there should be air left under the cars.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be a beast to drive the things. And what I'm seeing now out of NASCAR, and it sort of was the way it at Indianapolis, it almost looks like a slot car race where, you know, the guys are just so hooked in to the track with all this downforce and such little power compared to their downforce that it just, to me, it's losing a little bit of what I tune in to watch stock car racing for, which is a little bit of the physical nature of the sport.
Yeah, I'm going to toot my own horn here a little bit. My father was the movie photographer at the Milwaukee Mile for many years, especially in the golden era in the late 60s and early 70s. And for the old USAC stock car races, you had the 68 Dodge Chargers and your Ford Torinos and whatnot. And you could see the cars coming into the first turn, and you'd see the driver wrestling that steering wheel left and right. You could visually see the car kind of slide out. You could see a car, if it had a push, you could tell what a push was because the wheels were turned all the way to the left and that car was going straight. So, you didn't have to be Junior Johnson to know what the car was doing. You could tell from, if you were just a fan in the stands, your typical 60s gearhead who changed his own oil, you could tell what kind of car it was. And second of all, what the car was doing, what the driver was doing. And if the guy was, and you could tell, of course, what the good cars were. And then again, you could also tell who the good drivers were. So when you saw somebody like AJ Foyt, Roger McCluskey, Norm Nelson hustling a car around on that track, you knew, hey, that guy knew it. Look at how smooth he is. Look at what he can do with that car. Whereas you had a rookie out there or maybe a guy with less experience or not as good of a car, you could make that determination. And I think that's maybe a bit what's missing in NASCAR racing today. Is that, what do you think, Dennis?
Yeah, you're right on the money. And of course, back in those days, everybody was running a BioSply tire, which really kind of skewed it on the track. And I remember watching some of the races, as a kid, especially the stock cars up there at the Milwaukee Mile. And every race, you could hear the squeal of the tires as guys were just sliding through the corners. It was just a matter of who was out of control less.
Yeah.
It wasn't a matter of being hooked to the track. And, that's what I fell in love with. I love all kinds of racing. Don't get me wrong. I love Formula One. I love IndyCar. I love the old Trans Am type cars. And I love IMSA today. And I love drag racing. Okay, big fan of drag racing. But one of the reasons that stock car racing had a position in my lineup of watching, and usually at the top of that position for watching, was because it was more about the drivers. It was more about the driver's skill. It was more about these cars that looked like they should be out on the street, not some, high-tech monstrosity that was all about racing. I tune into Formula One and IndyCar because I love the technology. I love the strategy. But I don't want to see Formula One with fenders, and that's what we have in NASCAR today. Those front splitters need to come off. We need to give them power. I mean, I'm sorry, but I will always be, bringing up the name of Dan Gurney. Lower downforce, higher horsepower, better racing. That was his motto, and it's as true today as when he said it back in the 60s.
Yeah, and Dennis, I think that all the technology in NASCAR, the downforce, how easy these cars now are to drive, it has completely killed the reason for a 500-mile race or the 600-miler, because you know after 100 miles, with maybe one or two exceptions, the cars that are going to be good and going to be fighting there at the end. Where back in the day, you would have the drivers who were in tune with their car back, you know, and especially way back when the drivers actually got their hands dirty and worked on their own cars as well, that could sit there and work with their teams and get their car remarkably better from mile 100 to mile 400 and put them in a position to take the checkered flag by mile 500. Now, you know, everything is so, it's too easy. And you know, after 100 miles, who's going to be fighting for the win? It's boring, don't you think?
Yeah, the engines are bulletproof. The transmissions are bulletproof. It used to be in NASCAR that it was an endurance race. It was a test of the manufacturer's parts and pieces back in the day.
Yep.
And it was a case of, you know, a smart driver, you know, like a David Pearson, might only be running 80 to 85% of what that car was capable on lap one. He waited until the end of the race after he had made sure that he was going to get it to the end of the race to go. But look at what we saw in the truck race last night. We saw some cars go out, but they went out because of the proverbial, well, you can't call it a 39-cent part anymore. It's about a $175 part. But a stinking oil seal that was mandated by NASCAR, they don't have a choice. They run this piece or they don't run. And so it's basically given, you know, not given to them, but sold to them by NASCAR, for lack of a better description, because they have no choice about what they run. And it failed on all of the Thor Sport trucks, putting Johnny Sauter out of the playoffs. That's the only way that you have a vehicle not make it to the end of a race now, is if some little stinking part that is mandated by NASCAR fails. If it's an official part from NASCAR and it just fails, well, you're in bad luck. You didn't even have a chance of shopping around to get a better part or going ahead and manufacturing your own piece that would do a better job at whatever task it was that this part was assigned. It's all now a spec piece that you got to buy because that's the only option that's approved by NASCAR, or here's the choice of three that are approved by NASCAR. That's it. There's no originality. There is no innovation that gets to go on in the sport nowadays. And I kind of miss the days. You know, it would tick me off as an Earnhardt fan when Jeff Gordon would show up at the track with a piece that was, you know, 2/10 faster a lap, because he outsmarted the rest of the field. You know, his crew chief Ray Evernham came up with a better mousetrap. You know, those days are long gone in NASCAR. I understand why they're gone. You know, I understand why we have a common template. I understand why I can't tell a Chevy from a Ford, from a Toyota, from the side. When I was at Indianapolis, you walk up to a car and you're alongside it, you can't tell what it is. They all look the same. It's only the noses that are different. You look at the cars from the back, and if you don't spot the Ford or the Toyota or the Chevy decal that's on the back of those cars, you can't tell them apart because they're identical. There is no difference to the cars at all, and that removes some of the charm from NASCAR for me. I still like the long races. I like the classic events not changing. I also don't like these stages at classic races. You know, it's one thing to have a stage break at a normal race, but the Brickyard freaking 400 should not be stopped for any reason other than accidents or a motor blowing. You should not stop just to score some points.
Right. The same thing with Daytona, too. You know, it's interesting because I still have people going, why are they break? What's going on? There's still a lot of casual fans out there that don't understand why they're doing it.
I'll throw Bristol in there too.
Yeah.
You know, Bristol, you're talking endurance, man. You're cooking around that little half miler 500 times.
you know, you shouldn't get a 15-minute break to catch your breath. And you should just go.
And here's the thing is it's not like with technology they couldn't score the guys at the end of a stage. You know, it's just, you know, it's a horrible analogy, but it's like the sprint segments on the Tour de France. They don't stop the race after that point. They just go on and score the points. In NASCAR, they used to give out something more valuable than points at the halfway point when you raced to the halfway if you were a smaller team because there was money to win. There was prize money to win at the halfway point of a race. That's how they kept guys racing in the middle of the race. In the good old days of NASCAR, they paid them. They could do the same thing with these stage points. If they want to do stage points, more power to them. Don't stop the doggone race. Keep the strategy there. But NASCAR is more about how many cars can we put on the lead lap at the finish so we look better? How many cars can we have within 5 seconds at the finish so we look better? That's why we got the debris cautions back, you know, years ago, and that's why we get the stage cautions now. It's all about, you know, cooking the stats. And I don't care about that. I don't care if a guy wins by 10 seconds. If he won by 10 seconds, that means he was 10 seconds better. Thank God he was 10 seconds better. That the whole idea is to get away from the other guy in racing. And if you occasionally have a race like you do in F1, nobody complained a couple weeks ago when the race was won by over 10 seconds. It was applauded for great strategy and great driving and great equipment that won you that big win.
Dennis, what's the latest at DMAC Media, sir?
We are hot in the middle of fantasy football season. Lots of fantasy football content over at one of our partners at fakepigskin.com, including some podcasts that we do from time to time. And also, of course, on the road with Braden Eaves as we get you to the end of the USF 2000 series with the young racer out of Ohio. Have another racer just 16 years old that you want to listen to this week over at dmikemedia.com.
All right, Dennis, thank you so much. Appreciate it. We'll chat with you next week.
All right, guys. You have a good one now.
All right.
You too.
That was Dennis Michelson on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline.
Looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019? Look no further. Call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local common sense lending to your community since 1935.
Coming up next, after the sports flash at the top of the hour, David Land on the Final Inspection Show.
Milwaukee, start your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, sports cars, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, here's your host, Steve Zocchi.
To the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove, along with David Hobbs Honda. And it's going to be a cool second hour. It's going to be a hour full of Davids.
All right.
At the second half of the hour, we're going to have David Hobbs on to talk some Formula One with him. But before that, we're going to talk to David Land of YouTube, who is at a racetrack in New Jersey, I believe. Welcome to the show, David.
Hi, reporting from New Jersey Motorsports Park. How are you doing, Steve?
Pretty good. Then that was a track that had, you know, they had ARCA there. I think Trans Am race there. What's going on with that? What's the status of that racetrack?
So right now I'm at an FCCA Formula weekend. So like Atlantic F1600, which some people would refer to as Formula Ford, but that's the official name.
Right.
That's what I'm doing right now, hanging out with Charles Ante of Ante Speed Racing. So that's kind of fun.
Is that the car you were in a couple weeks ago?
No, but the Challenge Cup is here. That was a Formula V. I got to drive a Formula V a couple of weekends ago, and this is an F1600 team. But I think the car I drove is here. I haven't seen it yet, but I have to look around the paddock a little bit.
And it's still one shape. Very good.
Okay, thanks.
Just kidding.
I haven't heard that one before.
I know. That was a cheap shot. Hey, you know, I saw your latest video. You talk about the Matt DiBenedetto situation and the Wood brothers, and they also mentioned it yesterday. I thought it was kind of good that, you know, people just need to chill out, can't they? When somebody makes a decision, it's not necessarily that person's decisions. There's also, it's almost like an onion, especially with a series like NASCAR. There's all sorts of other things involved when a decision is made, whether it's a sponsor, crew chief, driver, you name it. And so when they were making a change with the 95 car, it kind of sucked, but you know, you got a talented driver and he did land on his feet, didn't he?
Well, I've got to tell you, I think Matt DiBenedetto probably got off the best, because ultimately you look at that, the Veen car, it's only ever going to be the fifth best Gibbs car. You know, I don't think they want to let what happened with Furniture Row happen again, where that car was the best out of that stable. So you look at the Wood brothers, and, you know, in a lot of ways, that car is kind of treated as a fourth Penske. So, to be honest with you, I think this is almost a better situation than what DiBenedetto is in right now, and he's in a pretty good situation right now.
It certainly is. And, we were talking in the first hour about, you know, the situation with Jimmy Johnson. You know, would we really be surprised if we heard a sudden announcement that he's stepping away from the sport, especially with some of the drivers in the past, like, you know, with Carl Edwards and now Paul Menard and Matt Kenseth, who basically was kind of like told to leave, I guess you could say. Is this a new breed of driver where, you know, you're not going to see a situation like with Richard Petty or an A.J. Foyt, who maybe stayed a couple of seasons longer than he should have?
Yeah, well, you know, you see it a lot more now with how early a lot of new drivers are brought up. I think I've heard it said by some veterans before, is that, you know, there's some drivers, there's a certain era of drivers where they were too young to get rides in their prime. And by the time they actually started to prove themselves, they became too old to get rides. We're kind of in an era now where youth is served quite a bit. So like in the case of Matt Kenseth, you see drivers kind of moved out of programs to try to bring in younger blood. I mean, that's just kind of the way it all kind of goes these days anyway. Carl Edwards is a great example of that as well.
You know, I shot a note to you about you kind of did a history on the Brickyard 400 and where it is today. And I thought it was some of your best work. Kind of talk us through that and exactly how they can see that particular video, as well as all your other videos, but and how you kind of came up with your information on that, because I thought it was fantastic and spot on.
Well, sure. I mean, all my content is free to check out on YouTube. Just search my name, David Land. But, you know, one of the things that I thought was kind of important, and I kind of noticed last year, is a lot of people have kind of lost the perspective of what the Brickyard 400 is and why it's a big deal and why a lot of people get so upset about it every year. You know, I think a lot of younger fans kind of look at it as that event that's the racing sucks and nobody shows up. It's like, why does this matter to so many people? Why did people debate this so much every year? So I kind of wanted to create a video that kind of talked about the history and kind of put everything together, because there's a lot of stuff out there, you know, kind of from 92, 93, 94, talking about it kind of in the future, but there wasn't really something that had a historical perspective, you know, kind of stepping back 25 years and saying, okay, you know, what did creating the Brickyard 400 do for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway? What did it do in the CART IRL war? What did it do for NASCAR? Looking at all those things it was kind of the linchpin in a lot of ways for a lot of those events that kind of transpired over the next 25 years.
It certainly was. And the one thing I had forgotten is how much demand that in that first race in 94, what the demand and tickets were. I had forgotten that thing could have been sold out many, many times. And I was at qualifying for that. I still say it's one of the greatest qualifying sessions I've ever seen, just with not only the amount of cars, it was north of 60 that tried to get into that event, but also the different drivers, the diversity of the drivers and everything. I mean, from Gary Bettenhausen to Jeff Brabham to A.J. Foyt to Danny Sullivan to even guys like H.B. Bailey and you know, just, and then you had some Winston West drivers thrown in there. It was such an eclectic group, and it was just, and, you know, I was sitting in a short chute between one and two and low, so I could see the cars coming into turn one, and they were just 100%, you know, just giving it all. And I mentioned earlier this year about Tim Steele, who had not the best car, and knew he just had to nail the perfect lap and was out of control in turn one, hit the wall right in front of me in the short chute, tried to save it in turn two, and then crashed coming out of turn, you know, crashed at the exit of turn two. You know, it was a 15-second crash, basically. So, I mean, the level of the competition back then, it had the big event appeal to it. You had to see it. You had to be there. And now it's like, oh, okay, yeah. And I thought you did a good job of pointing out how big that event was. And for not only just people in Indianapolis or the Midwest, but just across sports, you know, whether it's Sports Center or even the person that doesn't really even follow racing, they knew this was a big deal, didn't they?
Well, I think, you know, and it's been said by other people than just me, but I think in a lot of ways it was the kind of the thing that legitimized NASCAR. Because everybody at that point in history knew, if they knew racing, they knew Indianapolis. And suddenly you have NASCAR, this new series at Indianapolis, the first time it had happened in 85 years or whatever it had been at that point. So this, you know, this was such a significant thing. And another thing that people don't realize now, because there's literally a go-kart race in Indianapolis now. I mean, literally every category you could possibly want to race. You can race in Indianapolis if you want to. Mm-hmm. Back in those days, there was one race, and you had to qualify for that one race. And that all changed with the Brickyard 400. Suddenly you had another opportunity to race in Indianapolis. You didn't just have to run Indy cars.
Yeah, that is certainly true. We're talking to David Land. Make sure you check out David Land, L-A-N-D, on his YouTube channel. And just so many things right now in racing. I was going to talk to you about one, and I just had a complete brain fart now. There was something other than one of your videos that I had written down here, and I cannot find it in my notes. But anyways, let's talk to I think about what I'm going to talk about. Let's talk about Vegas. And with the Arrow push, a great race last night. Austin Hill, I don't know if you saw that, but we've always said on the show that the truck race is usually the best race of the weekend at a NASCAR track. And I was just wondering, what are your thoughts on coming up on Vegas this weekend?
So I did see the truck race. I think the big loser out of that, the big winner, of course, was Austin Hill. But the big loser was Ilmor Engineering, blowing all the engines up and really screwing over Thorsport, which was great TV. But boy, oh boy, I felt bad for those guys who didn't get to race for a spot in their championship.
Yeah, certainly.
In terms of – oh, no, go on.
No, I was just agreeing with you. Yeah, it certainly was. I mean, just – and to have things happening right at the same time, it was embarrassing.
Yes. In terms of Vegas tomorrow, you know, it's so tough to pick. I mean, I think it's, you know, you especially at Las Vegas, I think you look at a Kyle Busch. I'm hard pressed to think there's going to be a lot of shock in this year's playoff. I'm more than happy to be proven wrong. I just don't see anybody shocking the world in you know, coming from the 16th seed in that thing. I just don't see it.
I know what I was going to mention to you was you talked about the doing burnouts on the bricks.
Oh no. Boy, that became a big thing last year.
It did.
I'm just like, you know, and it's not just me. I mean, it's literally Doug Bowles, the president of the Speedway, who's told them repeatedly, just, you can burn out wherever you like. Just don't do it on the yard of bricks. I feel like that was a simple request. And, you know, again, a lot of people misunderstanding kind of the history and the tradition at Indianapolis, or maybe being a bit defiant of it, you know, got a bit upset when I suggested that maybe NASCAR shouldn't do that. and you know, I just kind of embraced the kind of controversy this year and just kind of talked about it a bit more in the lead up to the Brickyard 400.
Can you talk IndyCar in the next segment with us?
Sure can.
That'd be awesome. All right, David Land will join us for one more segment. We'll talk some IndyCar racing coming up next on the Final Inspection Show. Final Inspection Show brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove, along with David Hobbs Honda. Joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline from his YouTube channel is David Land. David, welcome back to the show once again.
Glad to be here.
This next week coming up, we're going to have the Firestone Grand Prix of Monterey. First time the IndyCar has been back since 2004. And those of us who always enjoyed the corkscrew and everything and the pass, Alex Zanardi and whatnot, what does Monterey or Laguna Seca mean to you coming back in the schedule?
Oh, well, I mean, you mentioned it, the pass. You know, I'm a young enough race fan where one of my very first memories was just looking at Alex Zanardi make that move on Brian Herta and it just sticking in my mind and just going, holy crap, this is the coolest sport, you know, in the world. So, you know, it means a lot. I think, you know, there is just, you know, that one image of that track that has been so ingrained in the consciousness of the, of, you know, everybody who thinks of IndyCar racing, and it hasn't been on the schedule for over 10 years. So it's going to be fun to go back there. I don't know how the racing's going to be, but, you know, it could be awesome. You never know.
And it's a three-horse race for the championship with Alexander Rossi, Simon Pagenaud gunning for Joseph Newgarden. Joseph Newgarden, of course, is in the catbird seat, but what are you expecting with, you know, the double points race and everything?
I mean, I expect Newgarden to win. I think it's really unlikely, even though, you know, Pagenaud and Rossi, those are some chargers. The problem is I think it's like a 40-point gap between Newgarden in first and then Rossi and Pagenaud behind. I just don't see many scenarios where Newgarden is going to lose that many points. Even if he has a not great day, you know, he's not going to lose the championship. And generally speaking, on the road courses this year, Newgarden has been fairly strong. He's at least been strong enough that he hasn't been too far away from Rossi or Pagenaud when they have dominated races. So from that perspective, as long as Newgarden doesn't do what he did in Ohio and crash in the last lap, I think he's probably going to win the championship.
It'll be interesting to see if Rossi can come in and kind of do what he did at Road America, get a pole and just start building out the lead. You wonder if some tomfoolery can start with some of his teammates kind of slowing down a little bit or doing, you know, working on, you know, I just wonder what strategies between the teams can play itself out.
Well, we know that there's an extra car at Laguna Seca for Andretti with Connor Daly there. I don't think they would play games, but you never know. The one thing that I think they can do, and we know from last season, is that Ryan Hunter-Reay tends to really turn it on tracks like this. Of course, I wouldn't say Sonoma is totally similar to Laguna Seca, but I mean, it's close enough that I think Ryan Hunter-Reay is going to be pretty strong. We know Rossi's going to be pretty strong. Connor Daly's got a lot to prove. So they're going to have some fast cars in Andretti Autosport. So if you can build a points buffer between, you know, let's say Rossi runs away with the race, if you can get Connor or Hunter-Reay third and fourth in the race, and you can get them ahead of Newgarden, you know, that's taking points away from Newgarden. So I think in terms of strategy, that's what you would hope to happen if you're with Andretti. But again, the Penske team is so strong. The one thing that's working in their disadvantage, of course, is that they have two drivers going for the championship, and really only Will Power can play a buffer or move out of the way if he needs to for points. And then, you know, I think if you're talking numbers game, Andretti has it, but again, it's such an insurmountable lead. It's going to be really, really tough.
Yeah, but we've seen it happen before, and, you know, we've seen races where, you know, unfortunately, I know one a couple of years ago, you know, the driver just seemed to pucker up, and it didn't, you know, forced errors and whatnot. So who knows? It'll be interesting to see. I'm really looking forward to it. And I know there are some people that are against, you know, the double points, you know, racing, but I, you know, Indy in the last race of the year, I mean, I like it. I mean, why not? Cause, I don't like, you know, okay, if the guy's dominating, you know, then maybe I may feel the other way and you get a champion that may not be as worthy. But I think any of these drivers that would win between Pagenaud, Newgarden, and Rossi would be a worthy champion in IndyCar for this year. What's kind of stuck out this year for you as a surprise?
I guess I'll say it. I mean, it's turned into a bit of a controversial thing to say, but I think, you know, Santino Ferrucci, who would have thought that that guy would be would adapt that quickly to mm-hmm. IndyCar racing and look that good. And honestly, you know, Sebastian Bourdais is a five-time champion. You know, a lot of people forget it because he did it in Champ Car, but I think those championships are just as legitimate as the ones in the Indy Racing League at the time, maybe a little bit more, considering how many drivers are still around from those days. So looking at it from that perspective, I mean, Santino Ferrucci is beating him most weekends by a pretty significant margin, and I think that shouldn't be lost. I think he's probably been the most surprising thing, because I think a lot of people thought he would have some character issues or just some judgment issues, and he hasn't shown any of that this season. So he's matured as a driver, matured as a person, and been able to really, you know, step on the gas this year.
Yeah, I totally agree. We had a press thing, junket down in Indianapolis before the Grand Prix. I interviewed him, and he had just got done practicing on the oval and was like real – I guess his nonchalance of racing on the oval was a concern for me. And I thought, oh, this kid ain't going to make it through the month of May without crashing. And it was impressive. And I ran into him at Road America. I said, hey, just to be honest with you, I didn't think you were going to get through the month of May without crashing, but you really impressed me. And he was like, oh, thanks. I really appreciate it. But, you know, sometimes, you know, drivers are a different breed, aren't they? And they're, you know, sometimes we can take their nonchalance for arrogance or whatever you want, but I mean, he is a special driver, and I think we're seeing it. And yeah, you know, this is a guy who, you know, let's face it, I want to say he was forced on us, but I mean, if you watch the F1 races back in the day, you know, there was a lot of Santino Ferrucci news, and you know, this is the kid, you know, is he another Scott Speed, is he gonna make it through there? And he was making his way up the ladder, but just the politics of European racing kind of bit him, didn't it? But certainly it's our gain for the U.S. fans seeing a driver his quality in the IndyCar series.
Well, yeah, I mean, you always hear about it. I mean, ever since Michael Andretti in Formula One, anytime there's an American that even gets a sniff of it, you're going to hear a lot of naysayers. It's just mm-hmm. it's just the way it goes. You know, and sometimes, like Ferrucci, you have them have a pretty spectacular blowout and, you know, makes international headlines. And, you know, but again, it kind of goes back to that point I made about NASCAR. The young drivers are so valued these days that they're, you know, I think in a lot of ways they're rushed up a lot of times before they're ready to mature into the drivers that they need to be. And then suddenly, once they've been rejected from Formula One, they get a shot at IndyCar, and suddenly they look like a driver that probably shouldn't have been shunned out of Europe so quickly. This just ends up being the way it. Alexander Rossi is another great example of that. You know, a driver that had a lot of pressure, did actually get to Formula One for a couple of races, but when he got to IndyCar, it was like, man, boom, on it.
Well, and Colton Herta, who's been so impressive too, of course, winning down at COTA, and that, you know, he was the driver. Everybody was talking about him, Pato O'Ward. Of course, Pato O'Ward has moved on to with Red Bull and their development series. But Colton Herta has been so impressive. But I think with Ferrucci, when you compare the two, what's so impressive with Ferrucci is his consistency and the amount of laps he's been able to run compared to Herta, which, of course, he's had some mechanical issues, not his fault, but that's been so impressive too, is he's been able to finish all these races, and race after race after race, he looks so good, doesn't he?
Yes, that is the thing. Santino has had reliability over Herta, no doubt about it. I think Michael Cannon, the engineer for that team, has done wonders. That's another thing that I should bring up, is that Ferrucci has had a really good engineering team behind him this year. And again, the reliability has been there versus Herta. I think Herta is just as impressive as a driver. I mean, think about how much he runs up front. Just unfortunately, a lot of times, you know, and he has made a few mistakes as well. But you know, he has mechanical failures, and that's something that only bit Ferrucci at Portland. I mean, it was the first time he hadn't finished a race, so that was a unique thing for him that year. And we've just seen it so much with Herta this year. It's hard to kind of compare them, you know, fairly based on the reliability.
What do you think of Norman and the BorgWarner Trophy?
I've never been the biggest fan of the IndyCar wives, dogs, or whatever. You know, Norman's fine. You know, and it's on Simon's trophy,
right?
And it's not on the actual trophy, so I don't have a problem with it. I think it's a good little gesture, good PR for BorgWarner. You know, I don't have a huge problem with it. Now, if they put it on the big trophy, then maybe I'd be talking about it a little bit more. But just doing that for the personal trophy, I don't have a problem with.
I think it's good pub. Yeah, they're certainly getting a Norman is a special dog. That's a neat dog. And
I want them to put him on the ticket for next year. That is the one thing.
Yes.
I do want that the photo of him barking needs to be on the ticket.
Well, so much so that my wife has become a fan of Simon even before Norman, and she actually bought a photo of that one shot of him in Victory Lane with Norman barking. I thought that was a really cool moment in Indy history to have Norman barking like that in Victory Lane with everybody cheering. That was pretty cool.
Yes, cheering along triumphantly as his dad wins the Indy 500. Yeah, that's one of the iconic shots of the last few years.
It certainly is. David, we certainly appreciate it. And how do we see your videos again?
Check me out on YouTube, David Land, DavidLand.
All right, David Land, thank you so much. Appreciate it. We'll chat to you. We'll do a wrap-up of the IndyCar series in the next couple weeks here.
No problem. Can do. Can't wait.
All right, thank you. David Land joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline.
Looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019? Look no further and call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local common-sense lending to your community since 1935.
Coming up next on the Final Inspection Show, David Hobbs.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
To the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Make sure you get out to Great Lakes Dragway this weekend, where they are racing. No, the rumors of flooding at Great Lakes Dragway has been greatly exaggerated. They have cars going down the drag strip, so make sure you check them out. And if you're looking for a new or used car, make sure to check out David Hobbs at davidhobbs.com. David Hobbs Honda for your best in new and used cars. No, there's no flooding there either. So, in fact, joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline from Road America at the Paddock Shop, it is David Hobbs. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
Good to be on your show again.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you coming on. And I'm making an assumption here. You're with Bert Levy selling a certain book, aren't you?
I am up here with Bert Levy in the gift shop in the paddock at Road America. A gorgeous, gorgeous day here. No rain in sight. Hundreds of cars, lots of people. I'm selling the book Hobbo, my autobiography. And Bert Levy, of course, is selling The Open Road and all his subsequent novels and, of course, the new audio edition of Open Road. So having quite a busy day. This afternoon, we're going to decamp and go into the village because they're having a Concours d'Elegance at the Ostoff Resort. So we'll be down there later on.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, of course, this weekend at Road America, it is the Aaron's Art on Wheels weekend featuring the VSCDA Elkhart Lake Vintage Festival, where they have over 200 Formula Fords this weekend for the 50th anniversary of the Formula Ford reunion, where they had a very iconic photo on the pit lane. Make sure you check that out on the Facebook page that the Final Inspection. And not only that, but there's also, I hear, of an art fair or an art exhibition in downtown Elkhart Lake too, isn't there?
Well, you're right. This morning then, this afternoon and tomorrow, Mrs. Hobbs has got her art show on in the Yellow House on Ryan Street. You can't miss it. It's right next to the post office. And she is doing quite well. And she had a very busy day yesterday. So she'll be hanging out there over the weekend. And, yeah, so all... I'll tell you what, this is the place to be, Steve. Elkhart Lake is where it's all at.
And I saw, I tell you what, Susan and I saw her latest painting with the horses, with the horse racing. And that is quite spectacular. I'm very, very impressed.
Oh, I love that picture. Yeah, it's great.
Very nice.
The speed, and you get such a feeling of speed and motion. It's really, really neat. Yeah, I like that one, yeah. She did that for a chap in England who owns a racehorse.
Oh, okay.
Well, he owns a leg of a racehorse or something. So, and he wanted a painting, so she sent that over to him.
Yeah. And but, and you can't even tell they're going the wrong way. Last weekend we had the Italian Grand Prix, in which you had the pleasure to participate in, and I love that race not only because it's a classic race, the Monza Raceway, it's just one of my favorite tracks, but also the Tifosi. I mean, it is just that much. It just gives it a big event, and the post race, the paddock, the celebration, and everything. And then when Ferrari wins it, it even makes that much makes it that much more special. But kind of give us for somebody who's never been to the Italian Grand Prix, give us how does it feel to participate in that race from the inside.
Well, you know, people talk about hallowed ground when you walk into the Indianapolis Motor Speedway or the Daytona Speedway, and you get an Au Le Mans in France, and you certainly get that feeling in spades when you go to the gates into the Royal, what used to be the Royal Park at Monza, where they have the Grand Prix, and there is just something electric about the atmosphere, as you say. The Tifosi, which is the hordes of Italians who are absolutely nuts about Ferrari. And it's just something very special to go into Monza. You can still see the old banking where they used to have the bank circuit. It still exists. It's getting rather overgrown now. And, of course, the track itself is the fastest track in use by Formula One, an average speed of over 160 miles an hour for individual laps. And there's just something about the place that just is magic. And, of course, it's just a sea of red and Ferrari flags, and their dreams came true this year. And I just can't imagine how Charles Leclerc, 21 year old, comes from Monaco, just really only his second or third year of Formula One. He won the Formula Two championship on the way up the ladder, drove for a year, and then got plucked by Ferrari, and, of course, has consistently shown up his teammate, four-time world champion Sebastian Vettel, who had an absolutely miserable day and has never won the Italian Grand Prix in a Ferrari. And, in fact, it was the first time Ferrari have won the Italian Grand Prix since Alonso won it in 2010, and which is obviously nearly 10 years. And so they've gone through a big drought. Lewis Hamilton and others have dominated the field for the last 10 years. So for the fans there, and Charles Leclerc must be just absolutely like on cloud nine. I mean, 21 years old, first year, by winning the race and Sebastian Vettel coming way down the field, he passed him in the championship. So now Leclerc is third. He's third or fourth in the championship, but he's very, very close to Sebastian Vettel, who's had two absolutely abysmal races, out in a first-lap crash in Spa the week before, and had an incident on lap one, turn one, last week at Monza. Had to come in for a new nose and finish the race. But, I mean, what a grisly 2 weeks he's had. And Mercedes, you know, they did okay. They came second and third. And they knew they weren't going to win at Monza because the Ferraris have suffered this year from lack of downforce. But the one thing that does give them also is a bit of lack of drag. So on straights, they're very quick. And, of course, Monza is practically all straight. So, and Leclerc, I have to say, drove an absolutely brilliant race under tremendous pressure from Lewis Hamilton, which he'd had the week before at Spa, held off the five-time world champion both events. So Charles Leclerc is a guy that you'll be hearing a lot more of over the years.
Were we surprised what Renault was able to do and our friend Nico Hülkenberg? And you know, they've been struggling all season, but for them finishing fourth and fifth was quite impressive for that team.
I thought it was very impressive. I'm a bit disillusioned in Hülkenberg, who I thought was, you know, for years, ever since he was in GP2, which is what Formula 2 was called then, I've expected him to drive for a major team, and no one's ever picked him up. And he still hasn't scored a podium in something like 180 starts. And it looks like Ricciardo is pretty successfully dusting him off this year. So Hülkenberg, in fact, has been let go. But obviously he wants to do his absolute best in the last races of the year to make sure that he's got somewhere to go next year. But I was a bit surprised at Renault's performance there, yeah. I think that demonstrates, too, that probably part of their problem through the years has been they probably suffered from a bit of a lack of downforce, which obviously did them no harm at all at Monza with all those straights. The Haas team, the American team, again, had a disappointing race, qualified well, got the latest Ferrari engine, so no lack of power. But they didn't do very well in the race. And because the Williams were dragging around at the back as well, they had a bit of a lackluster time. The Alpha team with Raikkonen and Giovinazzi had a fairly good day out. But yeah, Renault really. And of course, the McLarens have had a terrible time the last couple of races. And Lando Norris is lying fifth at Spa till the last lap. And they didn't have much luck at Monza either. But all in all, a pretty interesting season. Shaping up, I fully expect Verstappen to probably win next week in Singapore, because the Red Bull Honda with the latest Honda engine is quite a potent weapon, especially when, you know, a lot of cornering is required. Suzuka, they'll probably do very well at Suzuka. And USA coming up, don't know. Hamilton and Vettel seem to have had that between them for the last 10 years. Mexico is a bit of a toss-up. And, of course, Abu Dhabi, the last race, I fully expect the Red Bull Honda to do very well there too. So I think we've got a very interesting closing season. I mean, it's still, what, six races to go? I mean, it's a long season. It doesn't end until basically December.
Right.
So, pretty interesting races coming up, I think.
And Brazil, too, which is one of those classic, I guess you could call it a classic track.
It's a very difficult track to set up for because you've got that massive long uphill straight, so you need power. But after you've gone through turn one and two, and you get off to that Pinho corner, that you up the uphill and downhill there where there's very tight turns, the old Red Bull should be looking pretty good there. And funnily enough, the Mercedes does quite well on tight tracks too. Not quite sure how Ferrari will do that. But of course, there's lots of time for these guys to
make changes.
I mean, they change every week, you know, spend millions and millions on improving their car. So, yeah, I think the last few races are going to be, there's quite a few to go. I think it's going to be a very interesting, basically, second half of the season.
And we're talking to David Hobbs in the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. And make sure you check out at downtown Elkhart Lake, if you can get up there, if you're not able to get up there to the track today, and you maybe just planning on going up there tonight and then maybe going to the track tomorrow, the art show, which is at the Yellow House, right across from the Brown Bear in downtown Elkhart Lake. Make sure you check out Margaret and her paintings for the pop-up art show. A lot of cool stuff in there. I think you'll be surprised the different paintings that'll be there. And then David, you're saying you're going to be at the concourse
this evening. Yeah. Bob Burton and I'll be down there for a bit.
Excellent.
And I'm not quite sure. It starts early. I mean, the first one they're setting off now, some of the older cars are doing a tour of the original circuit up here, which is about 7 miles. You know, it goes all around the lake and out into the country and back through town. And then they're going to end up downtown and have their own concourse and be lined up on Lake Street for everybody to look at. And then a whole bunch more cars are going to go down, leaving here at about 4 o'clock. And so they'll be down here like 4:10, 4:15, and they'll be there parking. They were going to use that beautiful green lawn in front of the Ostoff, between Ostoff and the lake. Mm-hmm. But they're now going to be in the park, the north park, on the north side of the building, the gigantic car park. They're going to use that instead because 2 nights ago they had so much rain. And they're just not, they're a bit worried about having all those cars on the grass.
Sure. All right.
So it'll be on the north side of the Ostoff.
Fantastic. And then if they're not able to get your book this weekend, you can still get it on Amazon?
You can get it on Amazon. If you want one signed, send an email to Hobbo, H-O-B-B-O, book, all one word, hobbobook@davidhobbs.com, and they'll see to it that I get the order and sign the book.
Very good.
And send it off.
Well, David, we certainly appreciate it, spending time with us, and look forward to doing it again soon.
Okay, Steve. Always good fun to go on your show, and I know you put on a good deal. You put a great deal of effort, and good luck to the guys down at the Dragway too.
Okay, thank you. And make sure you tell Bob and Bert I said hello. So, and we'll chat again. All right, that's David Hobbs.
Right, thank you.
Thank you, David, joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline.
Looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance 2019? Look no further. Call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local, common-sense lending to your community since 1935.
Jeff and I will wrap up the show coming up next on the Final Inspection Show. To the Final Inspection Show, Steve Zopke, along with the Polish Pipe Bomb, Jeff Orlowski. He's been quiet this last half hour or so.
Well, I didn't want to steal any of the thunder. David Land and David Hobbs, both absolutely on a roll. Those were fantastic interviews.
A lot of news going on. I just want to make sure that I cover everything.
Well, you've done a hell of a job, Steve, like always. And, it's kind of sad that, you know, you got the playoffs starting in NASCAR and all that. And, you know, IndyCar, they're coming down to the championship and three guys going at it and everything like that. There's tons of great storylines, but everywhere you look, it's all going to be NFL football. So the racing definitely gets overshadowed this time of year. And it's a shame because, you know, it's still going good.
Hey, you want to go on a road trip?
Where?
Well, the IRMA, the Indiana Racing Memorial Association, and the Bench Racing Weekend are having a get-together, their version of Bench Racing Weekend, which is a bunch of guys get around and talk racing. What we're going to do, they're having an event Friday and Saturday, which is going to be October. Let's see here. I have this right here. Boy, I think it's October 26th, I believe. It's the last weekend in October.
Okay.
And it all culminates with on a Saturday dinner banquet with Alan Zer Jr. and Indianapolis Motor Speedway historian Donald Davidson. But there's going to be events all throughout the weekend of Friday night. They have a kind of a sprint car racing night and chat with Pancho Carter and Steve Stapp, along with Dave the King Wilson. They're going to have shop tours and tours of the museum and much more. $90 for the whole thing. And I've been down there. I've been doing that for 20-plus years, and always a good time. And that's an event that started back in Chicago in the late 70s with the great Emil Andries and Duke Nalen.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, a lot of fun. So if you want to do that, you can check out the Final Inspection on Facebook for all the details there.
Yeah, good stuff.
And Vegas this evening. What do you think about the them going with an evening race on Saturday, I think that's good. I'm kind of curious, them going Sunday night. Are you going up against the Eagles and the Falcons? What do you think, pro, yay, or nay? What do you think?
Well, I think obviously it's a benefit for the fans that are at the race because, you know, obviously Vegas is not a cool climate. So the later you can start the race, the more comfortable the fans are going to be sitting there watching it, and you might be run a better chance of getting more fans out to the track knowing that they're not going to sweat out 800 pounds of water while they're sitting there watching.
And it's better for the trucks to run a Friday night than a Thursday night. So doing the Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, they're doing a Friday evening, Saturday evening, Sunday evening. And if you're going to go to Vegas, why not fly out Monday, right?
Of course. And, you know, so I like it. I like it. I will definitely have, you know, most 90% of my attention will be on the NASCAR race. Very little on Falcons Eagles. I don't care much about that game.
You don't have Carson Wentz as your fantasy football quarterback?
No, no, I'm not a big believer. But you know, so yeah, I like the schedule on it. But again, this goes back to once the NFL season starts. If NASCAR is so hell bent on not shortening the schedule and trying to wrap up the playoffs before week one of the NFL season like they should, they should run these races on a Wednesday night.
Yes.
Because you're going to tell me you couldn't draw the same crowd on a Wednesday night in Vegas that you can on Sunday night? You would absolutely still be able to draw the same amount. The diehards are still going to go out there. So, and I think that, you know, you would be able, especially the first couple years with the novelty of it and everything, a midweek extravaganza, midweek hump day night out for, you know, for dads and moms to bring their kids to the track and stuff like that. And yes, it's on a school night and all that, but, you know, I think that you would get a good TV rating number, and I think you would still get a lot of people to show up at the track.
Kurt Busch, interesting fact, his worst track by average finish is Vegas.
His home track.
Yeah, 21.5. The next worst is Martinsville, then Indianapolis, Michigan, and Miami, or Homestead. I was shocked by that. I was really, really surprised.
Yeah.
And then you had the best 10-lap average yesterday at Vegas. It was Kyle Busch with Chase Elliott second, Joey Logano third, Eric Jones, who's been quick lately, fourth, Kevin Harvick, fifth, Denny Hamlin, Brad Keselowski, Ryan Newman, who's also been showing some speed as of late, your buddy Jimmy Johnson, ninth, and Alex Bowman, tenth.
Yeah, yeah, that you know, I hope that tomorrow night's race is entertaining, and I hope that there's some passing for the lead, and that it's not just catch up to the guy in front of you and then wait for the next restart to try to pass him. You know, like I said earlier in the first hour, it's a lot like the strikeout or home run only in baseball where it gets kind of boring. And they're definitely missing out on the mid-race action and all that when you're so dependent on restarts to have a decent bunch of laps.
And, of course, last night, Austin Hill winning his third career race after winning the opener at Daytona. And then he won at Michigan, which kind of he was struggling until then, and Michigan really helped it out. And then Vegas was a very impressive win last night for Austin Hill. So with so you got Brett Moffitt, Austin Hill, Ross Chastain, I think, is your big three in your playoffs. And you also have Stuart Friesen, Matt Crafton, who was able to transfer in, and Tyler Ingram.
Yeah, you know, don't sleep on Stuart Friesen. I think that you know, he's had a lot of bad luck this season, and I think that, you know, he's got speed, and he's obviously got talent. So I think that Friesen can sit there and make a legitimate push to join those top three and give them a run.
Predictions? I'm thinking Kyle Busch for the Cup race, maybe Christopher Bell for Xfinity.
Yeah, I like Bell for the Xfinity. I'm thinking, you know, Kyle Busch. I wouldn't be surprised if Keselowski Has himself a good race, but it's hard to pick against the Toyotas.
What if like Jimmy Johnson would win? Would you be kind of, if you're Jimmy Johnson, you're pissed about that? Are you like, oh, why couldn't I do this last week? Or what do you think?
I think he would just be so relieved that he saved his season. And, you know, I don't think he would be mad at all if he finds victory lane, no matter how it happened. Whether this, you know, it's rain shortened, it's lightning, whatever. Act of God, I think Jimmy Johnson would be overjoyed to take another checkered flag. Because every week it seems less and less likely that he's ever going to find victory lane again.
You really wonder if he's going to be able to do that. I just, who would have thought, you know, if you're, you know, even 6 months ago, or a year ago, you would have thought, oh, come on, crazy talk.
Do you think that all the youth that's on that team has hurt Jimmy because he doesn't have a KG Wiley old veteran that he can sit there and kind of help him?
It's harder and harder as you go along, and I think it's the pencil you draw at the top of NASCAR just gets narrower and narrower. It's a fine mechanical pencil you got, and it's just, if you're just a little bit off.
Yep, I agree.
All right, thanks to everybody that was on the show. Dennis Michelson, David Land, David Hobbs. Appreciate it. We'll see you next week on The Final Inspection Show.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.